CliffCentral.com.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday. It's the 20th of April, and it's CliffCentral.com. We are joined this morning by you and by Michael Flax, and then, of course, Sangweni and Cliff. You know, we gotta earn our keep here. How you doing, Flaxies? Nice to see you, dude.
I'm literally having the best morning, and it's like just started. I woke up, and this is like a very rare occasion. Doesn't happen to most, but when it happens, it's the best.
Yeah.
I opened up my emails.
Yeah.
First email in bold, like all capital letters, yeah. Salary review. So I'm like stressing. I start like panicking. Maybe I'm going to have to go in for like a review and stuff. Letter attached for salary increase. Like how that doesn't happen to
you. That's amazing.
Yeah. I feel like a baller.
That is pretty cool, though. I mean, I don't think that happens to a lot of people.
Let me go to my inbox. Let me see if that's there for my lovely boss.
Because usually I thought, like, you go in and you have a negotiation and you try, like, explain to them how you've done so well and things like that.
Yeah.
This was just given.
That's very nice, Flax. Wow. That is a great way to wake up. I will admit, that's terrific. That pretty much wins.
How long have you been there now?
I've been at my current company for 10 months now. But I think how it works in companies is they give you a salary review according to their financial year, not when you started. I don't know. All companies might be different.
They're all different. Some people pay their people in Bitcoin. No, really. I mean, it's like it's amazing. So, listen, what a way to start your day, as you said, couldn't be better.
Would you accept Bitcoin? Like, if someone came to you and would rather pay you in Bitcoin,
I would. I mean, you know, last week you would have been paid a lot more than this week, but I think it's all. I think it's neither here nor there. I mean, like either way, you take your chances, right? And just maybe you end up scoring on the upside. It could be very lucrative. I do think in the long run, though, that Bitcoin is going to be a lot more valuable than it is now, and it's already not bad. So if you take this as like if you take $50,000 a Bitcoin, I think that's a good place to start. You know, you can only really do well from there. But you have to be one of those people who doesn't mind the risk. And I suppose if you have a life where you have responsibilities like children or a massive amount of expenditure or whatever, then it probably wouldn't work for you. But if you're willing to take a chance and you're kind of on your own and you can do whatever you like, I think it's a great way to do things. And you'd need balls. You'd need serious balls to do it. But I think it could be cool. Anyway, I've noticed
the other day when it has become the norm.
It might well be the norm soon. Yeah,
the first Ferrari in South Africa was sold using Bitcoin like 2 days ago.
Oh, really? Sure.
And I see like Bitcoin ATMs in the shopping centers now.
You know, it is amazing. I was really? Talking to there's one in Sandton City. We actually spoke to the guy on the show, I think, who put it in. I spoke to Fred. Do you remember Fred Rode, who did the Discovery series with us, and he runs Heavy Chef? And I saw Fred yesterday because we did an interview. He needed to have me on his. It's almost like an online university for entrepreneurs. And he was telling me about some of these guys who've done really well. You know, these dudes who sold Yuppie Chef the other day, and they're all in a surf club together, and they're all terrible surfers, but they all surf together.
How did that happen?
I don't
know. All surfing together, but they're all terrible.
They're terrible.
It's a prerequisite to not know how to surf.
He said none of them know how to surf properly, but they're all these guys, and some of them have done really well, and they've got, you know, they've made a huge amount of money. And I'm like, you know, that's got to be a good place to be as well, whether you're young or old or wherever you are, and you've got to be realistic about these things. It's like, you know, not no one, but very, very, very few people end up making like millions in their 20s or 30s. And even in your 40s, you'd be ahead of your time. 50s and 60s is where most of the people make their huge money. And I know that's frustrating, because all my life I've thought, I don't want to be rich in my 60s, because you kind of, you know, you're starting to slow down in your 60s. Let's be realistic about it. And some of these guys are really young, and they've kind of sold their businesses, and they've decided they're going to cash out and live a really interesting life and do whatever it is that they want to do. And that's really, that's spectacular. I mean, must be hugely rewarding to wake up in the morning and know that you don't have to earn more money, but you might want to. You know, when your motivation is, I'm going to do what I love, I'm going to do more of what I love, I'm going to do things that change the world, I'm going to do things because it inspires and motivates me, but not because I need to pay the bills.
Hmm.
There's a huge difference.
And you can take bigger risks.
I think a
really cool point is to get to where you have so much in investments that your salary is just coming from your investments and you don't have to work.
Yeah.
And like, that's enough to get you through. I think that's like a dope place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the dream, right? I woke up this morning though, and it's definitely getting really dark, really early. I mean, so we're almost at the end of April. Technically May is winter, right? So yeah, it's starting to become. I used to sit here during summer, and I'd sometimes have, you know, a shirt and shorts on, and I wouldn't even wear shoes most of the mornings. Now, it's like it's getting chilly, so you have to put on longs, you have to, you know, put on shoes, otherwise you freeze. So that's coming.
What's your guys' view on long sleeve shirts? I don't feel like people wear them like anymore.
You mean like collared?
The actual shirts being the long sleeve.
You mean like collared ones? No. Or do you mean like just a t-shirt with long sleeves?
Normal round neck t-shirt with longer sleeves.
I was wearing one yesterday.
Do you own any?
Yeah, I was wearing one yesterday for the TV show when we recorded it. And they're nice in winter, but I mean, they're not, to me, they're not very smart, and they're not very, I don't know. I mean, I don't love them. I think if you're going to wear a long sleeve thing, let it be a, you know, collared shirt. Otherwise, wear a t-shirt.
They look like pajamas to me, and I've like yet to see a fashionable version of a long sleeve t-shirt.
Mm.
That's the downside.
I know what you mean.
excuse me, make way, as a Star Wars judge.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, you were.
I would say it's very important to dress it up, if you shall.
I forgot.
Yeah, I think like
I just needed to name drop.
I forgot that Sia was a Style Awards judge. That's quite something to put on your CV, Sia.
I forget too. Then it's hilarious. It's hilarious. It was actually last year, but it was months after it happened in 2019.
Yeah.
That I got a call from security. And they said, we have a delivery for you. And I thought, oh, I wasn't even expecting any delivery. It was this very gorgeous smart box. And I love a great handwritten note. And it was a thank you letter. Thank you so much for being part of our judging process. I opened the box and it's this gorgeous trophy. Where is it?
You have a trophy.
Let me go and get it.
Go and fetch it.
I know.
That's very
so
good.
Now that's the talking point here.
And you can tell people you were a Style Awards judge. So, you know, that makes everybody nervous to, like, arrive in front of Sia looking anything but sharp, because he's going to judge
you. I can't imagine, like, Sia saying something bad about someone's outfit. Like, I just can't see that.
No, I think you can.
Look at this.
Oh, wow.
It's a full-on...
Look at that.
Now it needs a nice wipe down.
What's it say at the bottom? Glam?
Glam Palm, the sponsors. And I thought, oh, okay, well, thanks for this. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Nice job, Sia.
But I don't have it like sitting by the door or in my lounge, because I think that's a lot. So I actually really don't know what to do with it.
Flex. Doesn't place pressure on you on what to wear as a judge?
Yeah, he has to. He has to massively. I mean, it's like Anna Wintour of Vogue magazine. She can never look anything but perfect, right? That's how Sia is. He's the male version.
That's what I kind of like about wearing all black. You can never go wrong. And then people just think, oh, he's very like, classic.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, I'm just lazy.
Flax, the last time we spoke to you, you told us about that dog and how you were going to give the dog its best life for however long it had left. And it was going on this tour, and it was going to the beach, and it was going on holidays. And how's all of that gone? And is the dog still around?
Instagram.
Yeah, it had it.
Guys, these dogs are living their best life. So two of my roommates moved out. They bought a Hilux, and they're traveling. So far, they've been to like the wilderness. They're currently in the Wild Coast, just living in like a remote little house next to the beach. Uh-huh. The dogs are eating like crayfish all the time. They're going for runs. Their Instagram handle is adventure_dogs_Africa. Yeah. And it's Mascara the Husky and Dory the sausage dog.
Yeah.
And they're like 15 years old, each dog. And they are literally loving life. Like every day they're going to the beach. They're going on boats. The other day, Shay, Mascara was walking across the pier. And the pier sort of collapsed and she fell into the water. And she had a bit of a freak out. But shame.
But they're both still
and
alive.
And then Dory.
They're both still alive.
Yeah. They're loving life.
Mm, sounds like it. Those dogs live better than most people in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to punish them, but out of sheer amusement, I'd love to now see these dogs just have regular canned food or just those pellets and see how they survive with that. Because, I mean, going from, gosh, whatever they're eating to that would be quite a downgrade now.
I mean, imagine like living your best part of your life at the end of your life only. Like, I want to live the best part of my life now, not when I'm like fragile and stuff.
Yeah, that's just not on the cards and something I don't want to do. And I don't know why, again, I'm obsessed with this Bernie Madoff saga.
Yeah, please tell me what's going on there. Because he died, he died like 2 weeks ago?
No. He died on Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, Bernie
Madoff.
So we
heard about it Wednesday evening. And I've now just been even more obsessed about finding out more about his wife, because the wife is the only surviving person in his immediate circle.
Right.
And how she used to live like a multimillionaire / billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And now has nothing and is bumming off basically her daughter-in-law's family, like living in some shoddy little room and has no money. I'm thinking about that.
Oh,
when
shame.
You say, Michael, you know, you don't want to spend, you don't want to just suffer for all of your years and just only celebrate towards the end. The inverse has happened with her living the high life and now just has nothing. It is crazy to me.
Shame. Imagine going
Did
from.
He jump, don't...
Sorry, I just imagine going from being really, really rich and having everything you wanted and living this luxurious lifestyle where you know every comfort is afforded to you and people just bow and scrape and it's terrific, and then you go from that to like having to have the spare room in your daughter's house. That's got to be really horrible. Mm. I almost think that's worse than being poor from the beginning. Because if you're poor from the beginning, and you never know what it's like to be really, really rich, then you don't know what you're missing. So it doesn't hurt you as much when it gets taken away. I think it must be horrible to live a great life and then suddenly have it taken out under you. And you know, this is all because her husband was a fucking thief. But that doesn't make it better. Yeah. Doesn't make it better.
Did he die in jail?
Died in jail. Yeah.
Yeah. At 18.
What was the cause?
Firstly, I'm surprised he made it this long.
Mm.
I'm surprised he wasn't shanked somewhere.
Or I'm even more surprised. Like, I'm surprised he didn't kill himself after the whole thing, because his whole family turned on him, rightly so. All his friends who he'd ripped off, you know, he stole billions and billions of dollars, and it was that big famous Ponzi scheme, to remind anybody who's still confused about who
Bernie
Madoff is.
Estimated to be about 65 billion that he stole from people.
And he took it from people he knew mostly. And you know, it was like a network. It was word of mouth. So people were all saying, oh, you know, Bernie's got this great thing, you should come in with Bernie. And you know, there were famous people in there and wealthy New Yorkers and hedge fund people, and they were all backing Bernie Madoff. And then suddenly,
Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor,
yeah,
was
correct.
There. How do you steal from a Holocaust
you
survivor?
You have to be a real piece of shit to steal from a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
And this guy did. And you know what? Bernie Madoff. I mean, good riddance. But at the same time, I feel sorry for Ruth. I mean, she didn't do any of this. And I don't think she knew anything about it. Otherwise, she'd also go to jail, you know? So I think she was totally innocent. But I feel bad for her. Now she's, you know, sharing the spare bathroom with, like, probably, you know, two of her grandkids or whatever. And, I mean, it's still not bad. It's not terrible. But it's a hell of a way to come down from a billionaire lifestyle.
I'd kind of say it is bad, particularly because she is now living. So she had two sons. The one committed suicide. That's the right. Other died of cancer. Oof. And so she's now living with her daughter-in-law, who Bernie also stole from. And before this, she was living with her sister, who Bernie also stole from. So it's now having to go to these people, ask for help. And you're like, all right, and my husband screwed you over. But the way I've read about her, the way I've heard other people depict her as well, is that, you know, she knew Bernie when she was 15 years old. And they've been these lifelong sweethearts. But she was a very typical stay-at-home wife. Now, she knew a bit about the business, but didn't really get involved. She never worked, never really got much of an education. So she didn't know anything that was happening. So you can't really blame her for anything. And that's why it was a bit of a shock when all of this goes crumbling down. She doesn't have a career to fall back on. She didn't start a side business. She like had to go and work for a charity and basically a soup kitchen just for some money at a time. That's tough.
So Jamie says, you still haven't told us what he died from.
I think it was just natural causes. Nothing.
Like a heart attack or something.
No story there.
I don't know how he got to that age. I mean, remember the story where his son committed suicide and was found hanging in his apartment? Yep. And next to him was a letter saying his dad made him do it.
Yeah, I mean,
Bernie speaks about that in that like telephone call that happened between him in prison and someone else, someone famous.
How do you live with that?
This is what
I mean. I wouldn't be able to.
This is what happens when you F people over.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if my child did that. That's got to be like top five most painful things that you can experience in your life is your own kid killing themselves and then blaming you directly. That's horrible. I mean, like that's the end of Bernie Madoff, but there's still all those people who you ripped off who are never going to get their money back. And I mean, some of them are also now living a lot worse than they were when they gave Bernie their money.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing that the son who died of cancer, well, before he died.
Yeah.
Didn't do interviews, wasn't really speaking. And he was asked once, because he did this college tour and he was just speaking to a very small class at college, why he didn't do more interviews, why he didn't defend himself. And he said, I am not the story to tell here because I'm also not a character that people would forgive. I benefited from the wrong that my father did. I had houses, I had holidays, I had cars. But rather, there are thousands of people who lost everything. You know, they put their life savings, they put their retirement, they put their, you know, they've lost their houses because of this. You know, if he started defending himself, rightly so, people wouldn't exactly, you know, have that much sympathy for him.
I would struggle to have sympathy for this guy. I think the, you know, this is also why I'm sometimes guilty of this myself. But I think we've got to, like, the material world is not the only thing that you need to focus on. And I think if you do and you become greedy like Bernie did, I think you really miss out on the real meaning of life. And I think you end up becoming so obsessed with money that all the really valuable things like family and, you know, and relationships and friends and experiencing like good things that disappears out of the window and all becomes like the balance sheet. It all becomes the bank balance at the end of the day. And that's no way to live. I mean, I know that we live in a society now, and we spoke about this briefly with Nina Hasty last time. In fact, it was this time last week about how, you know, that these people who live these great lives on social media, and they appear to have lots of money and they have great experiences and they always look beautiful in their pictures and they, you know, on holiday all the time or whatever it is. but they're actually, you know, not coping. And maybe their finances are not coping. And for some of them, that's just unbearable. And they do, you know, they can kill themselves, like Bernie's son. And that's, to me, like, that's a dumb reason to commit suicide, because of finances. You know, there are very few good reasons to commit suicide. And this is a controversial thing that people get into. And I don't know if we want to talk about this today, but to actually not be able to cope with not having money and making that the reason that you kill yourself, you really have missed the point of life, because there are very poor people who are extremely happy in this world. There are people who have nothing, who have way less than you, me, and everybody else that you know. And they still manage to have a good life. They manage to wake up in the morning, help other people, smile, laugh, find something meaningful to do. And obviously life is easier if you have money, but that's not a reason to quit. And, you know, you can always make money. You can always make money. Like, you could go out there and sell something. It only takes one good idea for someone to become very, very successful. It doesn't take 20 good ideas. You don't have to be the cleverest guy in the room. You know, there's a dude running around somewhere in the world who invented those, you know, those things that you use to close the bread packet, those little plastic things.
Yeah.
There's some guy who invented that, he's probably not smarter than any of us. He's probably about as smart as the average person, right? Maybe he's even a little bit dumber, who knows? But he discovered that and made these little plastic things, and he's probably got more money than everybody else who's listening to us right now. Even if we put all our money together, we might not have as much as him. And that was just one good idea. And that could happen to you. You don't quit life because of that. It's just amazing.
Someone once told me the easiest formula to becoming a millionaire, and it's like the most basic formula ever.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is find a problem that a million people face, mm-hmm. and you charge each one of them R1 to solve it.
Correct.
But so if you had a problem, Gareth, and I said I can solve it for just R1 and your problem will go away, would you not give me R1?
Sure, of course. I mean, that's what, and that's exactly why you can't begrudge someone who has done well, right? Because if you, for example, if you're jealous of Steve Jobs, Avashalom, Shalom, when he was still alive, then, you know, Steve Jobs, all this equipment that we're using this morning in my house that we're doing the show on, my laptop and, you know, my phone and my iPad and all that stuff, if he hadn't come along, we wouldn't be able to do this. So you can't think that, you know, that money doesn't accrue to him, that he didn't deserve it. He's made our lives better. He's made everybody in the world that much more capable of living out their dreams and doing the things they want to do and being more productive. He deserves whatever he's got. He's solved the problem, which is exactly what Flax is saying. And if you can solve people's problems, even if it's closing the bread packet for them, that's an amazing thing to be able to say you've done.
Was that a Hebrew word term you just used?
Ava Shalom.
Yeah, I was also shutting off.
Ava Shalom. It means that person who used to be with us. They're now gone, dearly departed, kind of thing. So, yeah.
What language?
That's Yiddish.
Where is it from?
It's Yiddish.
Are you sure you're not thinking Chas Shalom?
No, Ava Shalom.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so here's something.
Look, I'm not condoning suicide or anything like that by any means, but I would say I slightly disagree, Gareth, because I would get it.
See, you know, let's
just
reason.
Use as far removed as this is. Yeah, but let's just use Bill Gates or even one of Bill Gates' kids who we don't really, really know like that.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from just having the carpets removed from under you. So everything you've known the main house, you've known perhaps your father's New York City apartment, you've known your two summer homes, you've known the ski resort that you guys go to over winter. All of that, the material is gone. And then it's also your place in society, what you're used to, the responses you're used to when you walk into a restaurant and people, you know, have those eyes and those whispers. And then it's also the friends that you can't really hang out.
I'm sorry, I'm not buying it.
It's debatable whether or not those were your real friends.
See,
I say I get it.
I say you can always start again. And the greatest stories in human history are the ones of people who've come back from nothing. If you want to
three butlers to starting again.
Yeah, three butlers. Let me tell you something. Real character doesn't come from the good times. It doesn't come from luxury and comfort. Real character comes from the tough times. And you know that guy who goes, tough times never last. Only tough people last. I love that dude. I think of him often. And I think that's exactly right. You know, we've all been through a shitty year because it's now a year and 1 month, basically, since we went into lockdown. And you can either sit here and moan about how shitty it's been and how difficult it's been, and maybe you have every reason in the world to. I'm not going to say that, you know, I know better than you. But you can also look at the positives. And there are people, I know people who've managed to turn their whole business around like that. You know, they were doing events and now suddenly they're selling fruit and veg or whatever. And they're doing really well because they just decided, okay, that even though I've spent 5 to 10 years building that business, it's finished now. I've got to start something new. You can't give up. You have to keep going. And so what? You lose your place in society. Who cares about that? I mean, really, you know, I know we all we all build it up in our heads that we are who our friends are, we are what we have, we are our reputations, and all of that has some value, obviously. But if you are suddenly, if they take everything away from you, you lose your job, you've got nothing else to live for, I reckon that that's when you find out who you really are. That's when you can come back and you can have a story to tell. And if you do make it back, man, the people who you still have in your life at that point are the ones who are valuable. They're solid gold, because all the ones, easy to be someone's friend when things are going well, you know. They say to you, oh, let's go on holiday, I'll pay. Or, yeah, I'll buy the drinks this round. It's easy to be friends with people when they've got money. It's much harder when they're going through some shit.
I think it's important when you're growing up and when you're still in your foundation stages, like even when you're like 12 to like 29, 30, that you start instilling values of that there is value in things that don't cost money. So go on holidays such as camping, where you're just in a tent. It might be a bit uncomfortable. You're waking up to this amazing view. There's no cell signal, so that whenever something bad does happen or you incur financial loss, that you don't see these moments as not valuable and not worth living for. Because
absolutely,
I mean, going on holiday, camping with your kids, and even though it might cost like R100 or R200, like that is still an epic holiday.
Look,
just because it didn't cost millions.
I think that the saddest place to be is when you're pretending that your life is great, but you're actually in huge debt and you go to sleep every night worrying about it. You know, you could probably live a much more modest life and not have the debt, and you'd be much happier. Because it's so easy to get debt. You know, you borrow money these days. I mean, if you really want money, they can get a loan. People can up their bonds. There are lots of ways to kind of keep other people's money flowing into your account. But you're going to owe that money, and that's going to kill you. It's going to wear you down. We've spoken to, the number of times we've had financial whiz people on here who give you good advice. You know, like Joe Camino, who he always has like the most sensible approach. He's like, he'd rather drive a shitty old car, but it's paid for, than drive some sports car that he owes the bank 3 million rand on. And when you were talking about that Ferrari and the guy who bought it with Bitcoin, that's different. Like if you're in that league and you can buy a car for cash or for Bitcoin, I mean, you don't care about money. Money's not an issue to you. But for the rest of us, I keep thinking back to that story that we had about SARS, where Judge Dennis Davis said they looked up the owner records of a whole bunch of Ferraris parked outside a fancy hotel in 2019. And they discovered that all of them were saying that they were only earning about 30 grand a month, which makes it impossible to buy a Ferrari. But maybe there were some of them who were actually like borrowing that money, or they'd got a loan, or they were going into huge debt in order to buy that car. That's terrible. That's like, who are you impressing? Because you think someone who likes your picture on Instagram is going to help you when times are bad? They don't even know who you are. They just see a picture and go like.
I've never understood.
I think we'll agree to disagree here because it's similar to the positioning of
we've been talking about this story last week. Yeah, we've been talking about this a lot, so let's move on. We've got some serious stories in the news this morning.
In conclusion, my life is not a Jennifer Lopez song. My love does cost a thing. I need money.
Well, we don't play that game here. Sia will be a kept man. He'll marry some dude who's got like lots of money. You will, hey Sia.
Would you rather, Sia, marry someone that's ugly but rich, or very good looking, like 20 out of 10, but has no money?
Sorry to quote lyrics here, but Jay-Z also said in one of his songs, "Have you ever seen an ugly billionaire? I'm cute. See, as soon as give me some zeros,
he's answered your question. He would rather be with someone ugly but very rich.
Absolutely. I just feel like society has a wrong idea of what wealth is. Wealth isn't measured by money; it's measured by your health, because health is something that you cannot buy.
Damn right. And
your
Flex,
wealth is your health.
If you are on your way out and you have a, let's say you've got a bad heart, or you've got diabetes and you haven't been treated for a long time, and you've tried the best doctors in the world, or you've got some terrible cancer, for example, there's no money that can save you. That's when you realize like this money is just an estimation of some value, and really a very tight little narrow corridor of value. Anyway, we have talked about this for a while. Let's get into some headlines. First things first this morning, Life Estimeni. The National Prosecuting Authority has announced a formal inquest hearing into the Life Estimeni tragedy, which will begin in July in the High Court in Pretoria. This is good news that the NPA finally, after how long, decided to do this. It was 2016 that this happened. 2016. It's now 2021. And the NPA is finally...
What happened?
So Life Estimeni was when 144 mentally ill patients died after they were moved by government from Life Estimeni facilities to unregistered NGOs. And these were people who couldn't look after themselves. They couldn't often make decisions for themselves. So they were in the care of the state, or they were in the care of their family, or they were in the care of Life Estimeni. And the Gauteng provincial government decided they were going to move them into these NGO facilities that were unregistered, and these 144 people died because they were looked after very badly. They were treated very badly. Some of them died of starvation. Can you imagine that? And because they were mentally ill people, the government thought they could get away with this. And you remember there were ministers who went and appeared in front of Dikgang Moseneke at the commission and just would take no responsibility for this. So I'm very happy about this. You know how this story over how many years now has been driving me crazy, because no one has been responsible. So they have finalized the date with a meeting with a judge, the NPA, and representatives of the affected families, and they hope that the inquest will lead to criminal prosecutions. Good news. The NPA's Lumka Mahanjana said it will start on the 19th of July of this year. It was determined in a meeting held earlier today. The NPA and different representatives from families and NGOs will be prosecuting the people responsible. Good. They must go. Aidani Mahlangu must go to jail. She was the health MEC for Gauteng at the time.
Surely an idea and a plan like this gets written down and people look at it and sign the plan, and those who sign the plan are held fully accountable.
Oh, Flex,
ideal solution.
I wish it was like it was that simple, but politicians don't ever do that. They have meetings about meetings about meetings. I saw an interview last night on TV with Aaron Motsoaledi, who's the Home Affairs Minister, and it was Sally Burdett on ENCA, and she was saying to him, "Listen, what are you going to do about all these people crossing the border illegally?" And his answer was so typical of a politician. His plan is to just have commissions and meetings about this. They'll all sit in a room and they'll talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And of course, they'll draft plans if we're lucky. And then eventually those plans will be put into action in some half asked haphazard way, because these guys don't really look at solving problems, especially difficult problems. There's no reward for them. Government isn't built to reward the people who do things. It's built to reward the people who slack and just can coast through. We know this because we don't have competent people in government in this country. So I love your question. I just wish I could give it a positive and optimistic answer. I can't. In this case, however, we can rely on the courts to do what is required. And if the prosecuting authority is going to lay charges against the people responsible for Life Estimeni, that's a start. It's better than these families just being ignored, right? And the dead people just being forgotten. This will continue. So the Reserve Bank has made a comment. There's this bizarre story about Tokyo Sekhwale, who claims there's been donor fund theft. And this is so weird. I mean, Tokyo, I don't know if he's maybe going crazy or not, but the Reserve Bank and the National Treasury on Monday responded to claims by Tokyo Sekhwale that billions of rands destined for the so-called Heritage Fund have been pilfered. During an interview on ENCA, Sekhwale claimed that the existence of the Heritage Fund was now in jeopardy. He said, "I am part of two people who are in charge of the Heritage Fund. Belongs to a very powerful family out there in the world." This is what he said. "This fund is here in South Africa already. It comes through the South African Reserve Bank. I'm one of the people who is a mandate holder for that fund. It is able to help the students with free education in this country. Jacob Zuma knew about the fund. Cyril Ramaphosa knew about the fund." Sekhwale said the fund had offered billions of rands to assist with efforts to fight the impact of COVID, as well as the debt of university students. So he says, this is Tokyo, "The fund is there, but it's in the process of making sure that it's brought into the economy. We found some resistance. When we checked the resistance, we found that part of the money's been stolen." This sounds very dangerous. So
I'd believe him.
Why? It's so weird. Like if he's one of the two people who knew about this and who was in charge of it and was a mandate holder, then either he stole the money or the other person did, in which case he must name the other person.
I think he's just trying to cover his ass over here. I think he's just discovered what's happening and he wants a full review instead of naming this other person, because this other person might be a bit richer than him, and then this other person's going to get his lawyers and come after him. So he's playing a good game here.
All right. Okay. It's just a very strange story.
Look, if money was stolen from this fund, it's not a far removed incident in South African politics, sadly. But I'm just trying to see the behind the scenes. You know, they say magicians are just all there with sleight of hand. I'm trying to look at what is happening around than just what he's trying to make us focus on. Why are you speaking all of a sudden? Who made you speak?
Well,
did you consult with before speaking?
I mean, Tito Mboweni.
What are you trying to achieve with speaking?
Tito Mboweni, the finance minister, put out this statement on Twitter. I mean, you know, this is what we're reduced to, is like having the minister of finance comment through social media. But he said, "Tokyo Sekhwale's statement about stolen money is untrue, sad, and it seems he was the victim of the many scams that abound. You cannot steal transmitted money from the central bank. How? His statement on television was unfortunate. I will reach out to him." So maybe someone has scammed Tokyo, you know? Maybe he's been like caught up in a scam. Someone was lying to him.
So much so that you go onto television to speak about it and not just have an internal investigation.
Who knows?
You know, I had this moment while watching some of that interview and I thought, this is somewhat Trump-like. It was very, punching his chest, very loud. And I thought, this is a little Trump-like. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute. He did host The Apprentice South Africa.
So, he did.
What if we're seeing Trump 2.0?
In other news, the Home Affairs Department, we're talking about Aaron Motsoaledi just a minute ago, they have said they have resolved to either repatriate refugees or reintegrate them. This is mostly the refugees in Cape Town we're talking about. You know, those people who've been living on the streets and living in shelters. There are 41 foreigners who've already been deported. 2 years after staging a protest against xenophobia outside the UN refugee agency in Cape Town and occupying a church off Green Market Square. Motsoaledi said the UN Human Rights Commission discussed two issues, resettlement with communities in and around Cape Town and voluntary repatriation back to the countries of origin. And of course, many of these people would prefer to stay in South Africa. 390 opted for reintegration. 121 accepted the offer of voluntary repatriation. So a third of them basically want to go back to the countries they came from, and the others, the majority, two-thirds, want to reintegrate into the community. But of course, you know, resettlement is not an option. They're not going to get free houses, and we're not going to just put them up somewhere. Because if you do that, then other refugees from all over the world are going to say, ah, that South African government's so stupid, they'll give you a free house. You can live in beautiful Cape Town, and they will take care of you, and then they'll all come here. We can't afford that. We're not exactly a rich country, so let's see what happens. But Aaron Motsoaledi, and by the way, the government of Denmark doing a similar thing with Syrians at the moment. In case you don't know, government of Denmark have said to people in Denmark who came from Syria and claim to be refugees, Syria is now not at war anymore. It seems to be settling down. It's time for you to go back. So there's lots of
why doesn't our government come up with out?
Why doesn't our government
why doesn't our government come up with like a skills development program whereby we'll have the refugees and then they'll come up with a scheme whereby we'll give them free housing, food and that for like 2 years while they in a skills development program, and after the 2 years they have enough skills to then go and get the jobs that they want, the ideas, or the money that they need, etc.
Because first of all, they are not voters, and therefore politicians aren't interested in them. Second of all, the people of this country, we already have 30-odd%, maybe even more by now, it's closer to 35 after COVID, 35% unemployment, which means South African people aren't being looked after. So if you start promising that to refugees and you can't even look after your own people, that's a recipe for disaster. As Linda says here, quite rightly, she's just echoed exactly my sentiments. She says, we can't even do that for our own people. And the same comes from Corona's boring. But I do agree. I mean, like almost a conscription type thing would be ideal. Again, Flax, if we had the money, but we don't. Our government is bankrupt. We have no more money. Former Vice President Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale. He was president. He was Vice President under Jimmy Carter's administration in 1976. Have you guys ever heard of Walter Mondale?
No.
I've heard of Jimmy Carter, but not of...
Yeah. I mean,
I know Dwayne Carter. That's Lil Wayne.
He's got to be like the least famous vice president in U.S. history, right? Anyway, Mondale was Jimmy Carter's running mate in 1976. He'd been considered the best vice president in our country's history by Carter, but not by anyone else. He lost heavily to Ronald Reagan in 1984 in the presidential election. And he died in Minneapolis on Monday at age 93. So a former vice president of the United States, Walter Mondale, who died. I think he'll probably be remembered more for losing to Ronald Reagan than he will be for having been the vice president under Jimmy Carter. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden and Jill Biden, the First Lady, said in a statement that they were able to call on one of our nation's most dedicated patriots and public servants and call him a dear friend and a mentor. So there he is. Hmm. Yes, Mr. Walter Mondale.
The two of them clearly had great genes, he and former President Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
he's still alive.
Jimmy Carter's still going strong, right?
I nearly said alive and kicking, but I don't know if he's really kicking.
You know the app Clubhouse, and I downloaded it when it came out, and I thought, ooh, this will be interesting. But I must be honest with you, I found it very annoying because the notifications pop up on my screen, and then I sometimes click on them by mistake. And then I end up in a room with all these people talking to each other, and it's terrible. So
why just turn off the notifications?
Well, I'm going to, but I also think I'll just uninstall the app. I mean, I don't see a use for us doing it currently. What we're doing now is pretty much, you know, what Clubhouse does in our own format. But Facebook is apparently announcing that it will roll out a series of audio features in the next few months, because one thing you can't do on Facebook is audio. You can post pictures, you can post video, You can post text. You can have polls, all that kind of thing, but you can't do audio. And now they're going to roll out live audio rooms, which is almost like the popular Clubhouse app that allows people to listen and participate in live conversations. I mean, this is what Facebook and Instagram do, right? Mark Zuckerberg's companies. They see what other apps are doing. Clubhouse does audio rooms. Snapchat did all those filters and stories. They stole those for Instagram. So they're just a parasitic company, these guys at Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram. They just steal other people's ideas and put them in. That's all they do.
But they're right.
Of course,
like,
they are.
Like, why reinvent the wheel? Just adapt the wheel for snow, adapt it for gravel. Sure. That's what they're doing.
But let's not.
They're making the wheel better.
Let's not pretend any of these people are original thinkers. They take the good ideas and they put them on their platforms. And because they've got huge numbers of people, they end up being bigger than the original idea, which is great. So go ahead. But let's not pretend that Mark Zuckerberg is a genius. He's just basically copy and pasting everyone else's ideas. So let's see. Facebook will allow.
At the end of the day, good ideas are done. Like, there's nothing new to invent. Everyone's just taking something else and improving it.
I don't have a problem with it, but don't think that Mark Zuckerberg is a genius. He just lucked out, and now he just steals all the good ideas while other people are slaving to make them happen. I don't mind, though. I'll tell you why. Because now Facebook will allow users to listen to podcasts directly from the Facebook app. So you could listen to us. Yeah, so you could listen to us on Facebook, and I'm happy with that. So go ahead, Mark, whatever you want to do.
I cannot remember the last time I listened to, like, radio in a car. I don't even know how to listen to radio out the car, but I cannot remember.
So I've been driving one of Phil Kurtz's cars from DeWitt Motors, right, for the last while. In fact, I've been driving different cars of his for a couple of months now. It's since probably about June of last year. And every one of them, luckily, has had Bluetooth. And my phone just connects automatically to that. And whatever, if it isn't a podcast playing, then it goes to my music app on my phone. So I do not know what's going on radio. I have no idea. I haven't listened to any of it. The only time I ever hear about it is when, like, Sia sends me a story in the news about, like, lineup changes at some station. But I honestly don't listen to radio anymore. It would be to me almost like stepping back in time. It feels weird.
It's like, I don't like the element of, like, it's so controlled there that, like, they told what to say and what they can't say. And, like, this sort of show is just, like, unscripted. You just go with what your heart wants to say, and your mouth just puts it together.
Just by the way, Carl seems to be confused between two different apps, House Party and Clubhouse. Now, House Party was an app that launched at the beginning of a lockdown last year, remember? It was an international app.
Well, yeah, we used it a lot then.
And people used it for like 2 or 3 weeks. They used House Party. And Clubhouse is different. Clubhouse is like it's almost like you've got rooms where people are having, like, mini conferences. It's almost like open public Zoom meetings, but mostly only audio.
But then someone has to send you a link, right, for you to join.
I think you can recommend it to people, and, you know, you can invite them to your room and all that stuff. But it's, I don't know. I mean, it's to me, it's annoying because it just pops up on my screen, and then I end up having to see what all these, and some people are really into it. Hey, like, I see some of my friends are doing it every single day. But I've yet to be persuaded to join it. Maybe I'm just being slow on the uptake on this one, but not really my thing.
I also think I'm just going to skip this fad out because it doesn't appeal to me. Even the idea of people are, think of it in a real life scenario. There are five people standing around in a circle having a conversation. Right. Then you now walk in and you just stand amongst them. It's like, if you weren't invited, then what are you doing in it? You know, they're already talking. So I don't know. It seems a little weird to me. And the fact that, it's just weird.
This is a great.
Maybe not the target market.
Yeah, maybe we're not.
Maybe younger generation that just wants to talk celebrity gossip in a room for hours.
No, I mean, some
and
of
that
it,
you can
I
drop in at any time.
A younger generation.
Yeah, the moment you two stop being the younger generation, then I'm way past my prime. All right, so just quickly, this is This is an interesting discussion. I see Tatler magazine has published this story. More people watched Prince Philip's funeral this weekend than Harry and Meghan's mm-hmm. wedding.
Oh, hectic.
Oh.
How's that, huh?
Their wedding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The event was watched by 13.6 million viewers. That's just in the UK. Coverage of the funeral spread across three TV channels. So the BBC coming up top trumps with 11 million viewers, followed by ITV, and that was 2.1 million. A further 450,000 followed on Sky. You see, people often forget because Sky News is available on South African DSTV, and a lot of people like Sky News, but Sky News is a distant third to ITV and BBC. Anyway, apparently the ratings for this in terms of people watching were much, much higher than the wedding of Harry and Meghan. How's that? The Duchess of Sussex mm-hmm. and the Duke of Sussex's wedding saw only 13.1 million viewers. So it's not a huge difference, but it's a couple of hundred thousand, like 500,000 or 600,000 people in the UK who watched Prince Philip's funeral that didn't watch Harry and Meghan's wedding. I think that's hilarious.
Oh, this is in the UK. Okay. Yeah. But it's quite telling if it's the supports within the UK.
Right.
Did you guys watch the wedding?
Yeah, I think I did.
I didn't even watch the funeral.
I watched the wedding, but then I had to record the funeral because I was at a wedding. So that was my plan. But they're not counting us anyway, Sia. They're counting just the UK.
Right.
It's so crazy how, like, it's their law that these things have to be filmed and in the public eye and that. Like, I can understand why. Was it Harry or William that left?
No, Harry. Harry.
The monarchy. Harry. Like, I can understand why he left. He wants to live, like, a private life and everything's exposed when you're in the royal family.
Yeah, Flex, if you want to live a private life, you don't go on Oprah Winfrey's show and do an interview. That's some bullshit. Okay,
true. He dropped the ball there.
Right. So Andre says, I only watched the funeral because I wanted to see the customized hearse, which I want to copy for my dog when he dies.
That's cute. I think it was that Land Rover.
Yeah. Anyway.
I didn't know it was customized. I literally thought they had that Land Rover for like all the funerals. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
No, he apparently, Prince Philip had a hand in designing it. All right.
How much budget would you guys put behind your funeral?
Budget? I really don't care because I won't be here anymore. I know that some people like to make a big fuss when they go, but it's up to the people who are left behind. And if they don't want to make a fuss about me, put me in a cardboard coffin and just drop me in the ground. I don't care. I don't care. I really don't. Yeah, I promise you. I mean, if I've done great things by the time I die, if I've really achieved incredible stuff, sure, then go ahead, give me some kind of fancy funeral. But if I haven't, if I'm where I am right now, just cardboard box in the ground, pour some soil on top of it, and just leave me alone.
Do you not want to pick your coffin?
No,
like it's the last purchase you make.
No, I don't care what I'm. Put me in. A pine box or whatever's cheapest. I don't think it matters. I don't want a fancy coffin. What a waste of money. What a waste of wood. What a waste of brass.
And tombstone?
Yeah, but make it simple, man. I mean, you know, they say that a grave only gets visited by maybe two generations after yours. And then people stop visiting that grave. So then it just becomes one of many old stones in an old graveyard.
But if it's an exciting grave, people will visit it, and it will be like a showstopper.
Michael, what's an exciting grave?
Yeah, explain what you mean.
Guys,
fireworks?
Have you not seen like those graves where it's like they show videos on it? There's a QR code you can scan to like a Wikipedia page. Those are reinventing like graves. Yes, there's companies doing it right now.
Amazing.
They let your legacy live on.
No, I don't. I don't care much about it. I really don't.
I want like an audio box by my grave that someone pushes a button and I'm like, thank you so much for coming. Unfortunately, I cannot be here right now. Please leave a stone and I'll get back to you.
I love that. That's fantastic. Okay.
You see, people a voicemail message. You're in the afterlife. Yeah. You're gone.
Audio message. You wanted to say Flax know. People will?
People will visit my grave. Like, just as you guys said that, imagine I said someone's got a grave like that in West Park. Trust me, the next person that goes to West Park is going to go there and push the button and have a little laugh with the guy. Like, I'd love to make people laugh even when I'm dead.
Okay.
So you also want strangers visiting you?
Yeah, like, what's wrong with that?
What do you care?
You're making them laugh. Your legacy continues. Rather leave a legacy than leave money when you die, because no one goes to visit the richest man in the graveyard.
Yeah, that's true. Although, there's some people who, you know, people still go to certain places to go. Like, who's the guy from The Doors? Jim. Just gone blank. I know everybody knows this guy.
Google will tell us.
Yeah, just look up the Googler quickly. His name, Jim.
Doors the movie or the
club? No. The rock band, The Doors. Jim Morrison. Jim Morrison.
Yes, Jim Morrison.
He's buried in the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, and he was a famous rock star. And, you know, he was kind of like, he died too soon in many people's opinion. People still go and visit his grave. So, you know, there are people who are like devotees long after you're gone. I don't really care. I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to be here. What do I care?
I don't know. You want to be remembered in a certain way.
Not really. Let people have their own. I mean, what, you know, right now, while you're alive, there are people who don't care if you're alive or dead. And there are people right now who love you or hate you, even if they haven't met you. So what do you care about what other people think?
You got to focus on the ones that do care and not waste your time on the ones that don't.
Well, then leave them some money. You can't.
You're still adamant.
You can't
just get that cheap pie.
You know, one of my favorite sayings in the whole world is, "What other people think of you is none of your business." It's still true.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know another thing I'm going to add to my grave is sort of like a system whereby it's, you know how you have at gates, like it would be a button system.
Yeah.
So every year I'm going to like create a sort of like a broadcast email that goes to my family and friends, where it will be a code and you can actually come there and unlock a tiny little safe, and I'll give you money every year when you come visit my grave.
You know,
and that's how you will get your cash.
You know,
not just going to give it in one lump sum.
People will steal the whole thing. They'll dig it up and take it away and then break it open, and then your grave's damaged as well.
What admin?
Yeah, what a lot of admin.
And then, Michael, like, are people really going to visit you because they want to, or are they visiting you because
for money?
They're being paid to.
Flax, forget about that. I want to ask you, have you got one? Is that the what is that thing in the background there with the what do they call those again? Those hoverboards.
This is a hoverboard. You know who gave it to me?
Who?
Casper de Vries. I had to go to his house one day and collect it, and it was like the most perfect thing ever.
I've got one of those, and I haven't been on it in ages, but I just saw it now in the background of your picture, and I was like, shit, man, that's cool. I forgot I even had one of those.
During lockdown, I was like riding this thing around the pool for hours.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, they need to make a comeback.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think
why was it awkward?
Well, basically, Casper came to me in the studio one day and was like, listen, Mike, I've got one of those Justin Bieber things. And I can't ride it. And I was like, what Justin Bieber thing? He's like, the thing that goes... So I was like, cool, let me come check it out. For some reason, he couldn't send me a photo.
Yeah.
So I had to travel all the way to Northcliffe to check it out. Yeah. And like, you know, Casper's like, he's like the funniest oak alive.
So
and now
weird.
He's like giving me a tour of his house. Then his dogs are like jumping and humping me. And then he's like, don't you just want to ride out here? It was just really weird.
But he gave it to
he's
you.
He's a good oak.
He just gave it to you.
Yeah, and he literally just gave it to me.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
I used to ride this same one I used to ride around studio.
I remember that. You brought it to the studio. I used to bring mine to the studio occasionally because we have that big room where everybody's sitting and there's enough space to go all over the place there. And I mean, it was really irritating for people because when I was kind of obsessed with it and I'd learned to ride it properly, I would ride it around while we were having meetings. So people would be sitting, taking notes, and I'd be riding around in that stupid thing. And it drove everyone
crazy. Just a little distracting.
It drove everyone crazy. But I haven't used it in ages. In fact, maybe I should just give it to my nephews as a present. They'll love it.
Yeah, I think it's still the in thing. I remember going with you, Gareth, once to like the Dome or somewhere like that, where it was an award show for a private company.
Yes.
And we went to go meet with the event organizers, and you just rode that thing straight through. Yeah.
I took it there because
you
it was.
You rode it?
Yeah, yeah. I took it to Sun City once. I did an awards show there, and I was emceeing it. And I rode it around the whole of Sun City. So everywhere I needed to go, I had my own transport. Do you know how cool it is? Are you joking? It was fantastic. And the battery lasted forever, so it was just terrific. I could drive it anywhere. It's awesome. It's like having your own it's better than a golf cart, and you can put a little backpack on so you can carry all your stuff on on your backpack. I think it was awesome. I think maybe now I'd look like a bit of an idiot doing it, but I screw it. I'm going to try again. I'm going to go and dust it off and get it out of the garage.
I'd love to bring back Heelys. I feel like those are gone too soon. And
that's
a form of transport.
Do you know what those are?
No, remind me.
You don't know what Heelys are?
Uh-uh.
Imagine
that's
a shoe.
Our generation, Mark.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I do know. Yeah, those things with the wheel in the back heel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I think those
were cool. Yes.
You fall a lot, hey?
They had to ban those in shopping centers because actually just getting like around much easier. I love them. The concepts there, the designs there, the ideas there.
Listen, I hate to cut this short, guys, but we've been talking shit for so long. It's 7:03 already, and we've got to get to the rest of the show. I know. No, time is running away. So Michael Flax is with us, Sia Sangweni. This is cliffcentral.com. It is a Tuesday morning. Let us know what's on your mind, 0797482090, or just comment on YouTube. And remember, while we're talking about YouTube, to like and subscribe if you haven't already done that, and tell your friends so you can bring all of them here and they can discover the joys of a live show that actually has interesting things to get into rather than just bullshit about the sport news, traffic, and time.
Cliffcentral.com.